The Beat Podcast is brought to you by Nutritia and is designed for healthcare professionals only. Asking the questions today is Ben, who is a parent to a six-month-old baby girl.
Baby poo. For new parents, there's lots of it, and it can come with all sorts of questions about your baby's health and development. I should know.
My name is Ben, and I'm a parent to a seven-month-old baby. On this episode of the Beat Podcast, I'm joined by Catherine, a paediatric dietitian who discusses gut development and poo in early life to support healthcare professionals with all of the many questions they may receive from worried parents.
So my name is Catherine. I'm a paediatric dietitian. I work in the West Midlands, and I've been doing that for around 5 years now. We will look at what the child's growth is like, whether they're growing as we would expect, whether we are concerned about their growth. We will look at what their nutritional adequacy is like. So we'll go through their diet history. We'll see how much they're having, you know, whether if it's a very young child, whether they're having adequate breast milk or formula milk. If they're on formula, what type of formula. We'll look at whether they're weeing enough, whether they're pooing enough, whether they're vomiting. So all of those things. And then as weaning progresses, and as they move on to solids, we'll look at what they're eating, whether that is adequate. Are they getting all of those micronutrients as well as the macronutrients? So, you know, their vitamins and minerals and things, as well as energy and protein. So, that's ultimately what we're trying to achieve. But then we work with a lot of children from different backgrounds, so you know, whether they have allergies or diabetes or need nutrition support or weight management, or if they are tube fed, there's lots of areas that a dietitian is involved in that you might not always think they're involved in.
Tell us a little bit about your team.
So we're a really, really close-knit team. They're amazing. We really support one another. We're always messaging each other if, you know, we have a problem, or they're always at the end of the phone, and the wider team as well. When you have a supportive team and everybody's very close-knit, everybody's got the same goals, and yeah, we come from different backgrounds, so you know you have doctors, nurses, health visitors, midwives, dietitians, physios, speech and language therapy, everybody. We're all doing separate things, but we all have the same goal, and working together is really crucial. So we all have our specialities. I know that if, for example, I need a weight for a child and I can't get out to do a weight at home, I will ask the health visitors, when you're next doing a home visit, please can you weigh this child? Please can you update me with their weight? And that is invaluable, because without that, I wouldn't know, you know, how this child is growing, whether they're tolerating a feed or not. So they are my eyes and ears a lot of the time. And it's really important to feel valued within the team. Sometimes you question why you're doing what you're doing, but when people approach you and ask you things, not only about patients, but about their own children, and they want advice, and you really feel appreciated and valued. So that's a big, big thing.
So Catherine, what are we going to be talking about today?
I'll start off by discussing gut development in early life, and then baby's poo and how this can change in the early stages of life, and then finally take a look at what is considered normal for poo and what might require further investigation. Okay, so starting with the gut develops rapidly in early life. In utero, at around 7 weeks, the stomach and the esophagus start to form. And by the time we come to the end of the first trimester, most of the major organs have been made, but they can't yet function on their own. At around 12 weeks in utero, babies start swallowing amniotic fluid, so this is how meconium begins to form. Meconium is a waste product, so it's basically early poo. It's made up of cells that line the intestines, called epithelial cells, lanugo, which is the soft hair that covers the baby's body, mucus, amniotic fluid, bile and water. Meconium production really picks up at around 19 to 20 weeks as the baby develops. At around 23 weeks, peristalsis starts. These are the wave-type movements that move the waste along the digestive tract, and shortly after, the intestines start to develop the ability to absorb nutrients. In the last trimester of pregnancy, the small intestines double in length and continues to grow further after birth. This rapid gut growth ensures sufficient surface area for the absorption of all the nutrients and fluid baby requires.
I've heard a lot more about the gut microbiome in recent years. How does this develop?
So during the first few years, the gut microbiome, which is the trillions of bacteria that live in the gastrointestinal tract, also develops rapidly. Before a baby is born, the gut contains hardly any bacteria, but during birth, the gastrointestinal tract is colonised with bacteria from the mother's birth canal. A healthy, balanced gut microbiota is important for many of the body's systems, including metabolism, intestinal barrier function, and immune function. It's thought that when the gut microbiota is unbalanced or dysbiotic, it may contribute to the development of obesity, diabetes, atopy, and gut-related diseases. It's this important link between gut microbiota and overall health which has made the gut microbiota such a hot topic in recent years.
Okay, so I understand the gut and microbiome are important in the production of poo, but what exactly is poo?
Well, poo or faeces, or a stool as we often call it, is the remains of food that can't be digested or absorbed and has been decomposed by bacteria. For babies less than 6 months old, their food will be breast milk or formula milk. The World Health Organization and UNICEF recommend exclusive breastfeeding for the first 6 months of life. Poo contains lots of bacteria and metabolic waste, such as bilirubin from the destruction of old or abnormal red blood cells, as well as cells from the lining of the gut. And it's bilirubin that makes poo brown in colour, and the green tinge comes from bile. If we start with the very first poo, meconium, this is sticky, a bit like tar. It's usually a very dark green or black colour and it doesn't smell. Most babies will pass meconium 24 to 48 hours after being born. If babies happen to pass meconium while still in the womb and it mixes with amniotic fluid, there's a chance the baby can breathe it in. And this is known as meconium aspiration syndrome and will require urgent medical treatment. On the other hand, delayed passage of meconium could suggest there's a problem, such as hypothyroidism, cystic fibrosis, a blockage or meconium ileus, or Hirschsprung disease. After this, in their first week of life, most babies poo around four times a day, but it depends what they are being fed. At around 3 to 5 days old, baby's poo will usually start to turn a yellowish colour.
And how does a baby's diet affect their poo?
Well, breastfed babies may poo after each feed for the first few weeks and then not poo for several days after that. And the reason is breast milk is easily digested, so sometimes there just isn't enough waste for baby to form a stool as often. Babies who are breastfed tend to have poo that's looser and creamy in texture and is yellow or green in colour. It may also look seedy. Formula-fed babies might poo 4 or 5 times a day initially, but then might poo only once a day after a few months. Their poo tends to smell more than poo from breastfed babies, and it's also browner in colour and more paste-like. Baby poo varies, so what's normal will vary for each baby. It can be really worrying for parents, and understandably they want to know what's okay and what isn't. It's important to encourage parents to closely observe their baby's poo, to learn what texture and colour is normal for their baby, and to monitor the frequency of their baby's bowel movements. However, parents' perceptions of what their baby's poo is like varies hugely, and what one parent thinks is a loose poo, others might think is a watery poo. The Brussels Infant and Toddler Stool Scale was developed a couple of years ago to characterise poo consistency in infants and children who are not yet toilet trained. It shows stools that are hard, formed, loose and watery. And from my own experience, having this visual guide to use with parents can help to clear up any confusion and identify when further investigational support from healthcare professionals is needed. I think parents, quite rightly and understandably, they get very worried that their child isn't pooing properly or it's not the right colour, it's not the right texture. So they will often come to clinic with lots of photographs of, different poo, which can be really, really helpful. So then you can talk them through it and say, look, this is absolutely fine. This is perfectly normal. Sometimes you might look at it and think, oh, this does not look, so normal. Maybe this needs further investigation.
What sort of questions would you ask a concerned parent?
I think, first of all, looking at the frequency of the poo, so how many times a day they're going, looking at whether the baby is straining, you know, are they finding it very difficult to go, are they finding it really easy to go, the texture as well, so is it a really explosive stall, is it up their back, have you got to bath them after every time they open their bowels, is it really hard, so, you know, sometimes we have parents come to clinic and they'll say it's like rabbit droppings or very tiny Maltesers, and it's really, really hard. So getting a good description of what the poo is actually like.
Is that particularly hard? Because I'm speaking about my own daughter, her poos, there isn't a necessarily like a consistency. Like you could have had the whole spectrum there. Yeah. I could have had all of those.
Yeah, and I think it's generally looking at the trend. So the poo won't be the same all of the time. It will vary. You know, it will vary depending on what the weather is like, for example, whether they're maybe a little bit less hydrated, whether they're a bit under the weather, whether they have, say if they're breastfeeding, whether mum has had anything very different in her diet and maybe that's been passed on and the baby isn't quite used to that, which isn't a problem, but it's just looking at all those other things. But generally the trend is the most important thing. So if you're seeing lots of poos that, you know, and you're thinking, oh, this doesn't seem quite right, that's the time to ask somebody else.
Okay, so we've covered what's normal, but what happens when there's poo-related problems like constipation?
Some babies may experience constipation. It's not common for a breastfed baby, but it can happen. Now, the Start for Life website states symptoms of constipation in a baby are pooing fewer than 3 times per week, finding it difficult to poo and having stools that are larger than usual, dry, hard, lumpy or pellet-like stools, unusually smelly wind and poo, baby being less hungry than usual, and a tummy that might feel firm. And in addition, NICE Clinical Guideline 99, constipation in children and young people, diagnosis and management, suggests the following symptoms may indicate a child has constipation. So that's distress on stooling, bleeding associated with a hard stool, straining, a previous episode or episodes of constipation, and previous or current anal fissure. NICE Clinical Guideline 99 details further how to recognise and manage idiopathic constipation. So that's constipation that can't be explained by any anatomical, physiological, radiological or histological abnormalities. Something else to add here, parents often ask whether it's normal for their baby to strain when pooing and worry that their baby cries when they poo. Some straining is normal, but it should not cause a great deal of distress. Generally, if the poo is soft and is a normal shape and colour, we'll talk about stool colour in a second, then there isn't anything to worry about. If it is watery or hard, then this may require further investigation. For some babies that look like they're straining a lot when trying to poo but pass a soft stool, it may be because the baby hasn't figured out how to relax their pelvic floor muscle when pooing. This is known as infant dyschezia. In this case, it may be helpful for parents to try bending and holding their baby's legs up in the air to encourage them to poo more easily.
What else should parents and healthcare professionals look out for in baby's poo?
The colour of baby's poo is an important indicator of digestive health. There are some colours of poo that could indicate a serious health problem. These include poo that is red, black, white, pale yellow or chalky grey. Red or black poo may suggest there is blood present in the stool. White, pale yellow or chalky grey poo could suggest a problem with the liver. It would be sensible to involve the GP or the paediatrician at this point for further assessment. It's important to remember once babies start weaning, their poo colour will be affected by what they eat. So for example, if they've eaten beetroot, their poo might turn a purple colour. If you notice a baby's stools have changed recently, it might be worth finding out what medication they're taking. Iron supplements may cause poo to go a very dark or even black colour due to some of the iron passing through the body unabsorbed. They can also cause constipation, whereas antibiotics can cause diarrhoea as they alter the gut microbiome and kill off the good bacteria in the gut as well as the bad. Allergies and intolerances can also affect baby's poo. An allergy is when the body's immune system reacts to the proteins found in harmless substances such as food or pollen or fur. For young babies, cow's milk protein allergy tends to be the most common allergy, but they may also be allergic to other foods such as egg, soy or nuts. Infant formula tends to be based on cow's milk protein, and the composition of breast milk depends on what mum has been eating. So if she's been eating dairy, then traces of cow's milk protein will be present in her milk. Cow's milk protein allergy affects less than 2% of infants in the UK. It can manifest in many ways, for example, through the skin, respiratory, and gastrointestinal symptoms. It can sometimes affect babies' poo. Some allergic infants may have watery diarrhoea or very loose stools and may poo more often. And I've seen babies in clinic that are pooing 20 plus times a day, which has been really distressing for both the baby and the parent. On the other hand, a baby might be constipated and stools can be especially soft with excessive straining. A baby may also present with blood and or mucus in their poo, but appear otherwise well. So if there was blood or mucus in the poo, that is a red flag, if you like, for us. So that is not normal. I think it's important to understand that some mucus is going to be present in poo. So it's in everybody's poo because it's what keeps the bowel moist. But lots of mucus, so lots of phlegm, if you like, that appear in the poo, that's not normal. And if there was blood there, again, that's something to look into further. So we would offer reassurance, but we would definitely be referring on for possibly further investigation and also looking at whether there is element of an allergy there as well.
And who would you refer the child on to at that point?
Paediatrician.
Yeah. Yeah. And where can listeners find further advice on this?
There are various guidelines that offer advice on the diagnosis and management of allergy. So these include IMAP, Bisaki and NICE, and there are others as well. When it comes to lactose intolerance, which is a completely separate condition from cow's milk protein allergy, it's the lactose, which is the main carbohydrate within dairy, that causes the symptoms. It does not involve the immune system, the same as an allergy does. Lactose intolerance is caused by a decreased production of the enzyme lactase, which is made in the small intestine. This results in decreased digestion of lactose, which can lead to digestive discomfort. There are different types of lactose intolerance, but the most common in this age group are secondary lactose intolerance, which occurs due to illness or injury to the small intestine, and this resolves after a short period, and developmental lactose intolerance, which occurs due to prematurity and resolves as baby matures. The poo of a baby with lactose intolerance is loose and diarrhoea-like, and it will probably be very explosive as well. And baby will also probably have a lot of bloating and wind and appear uncomfortable. Lactase drops or a lactose-free formula may help to manage lactose intolerance. Your local trust might have its own guidance on the management of lactose intolerance, or you can contact the GP or your local paediatric dietitians for further advice.
So overall, what are important key symptoms for healthcare professionals to look out for?
There are some red flags that should not be ignored, and these include constipation from birth or that started in the first few weeks of life, failure to pass meconium for more than 48 hours after birth in a term baby, ribbon stools, so that's stools that look stringy, previously unknown or undiagnosed weakness in the legs or locomotor delay, and abdominal distension with vomiting. It's recommended babies presenting with any of these red flag symptoms should be referred urgently to a healthcare professional with experience in the specific aspect of child health that's causing the concern. So this could be the GP or the paediatrician, for example.
How do you reassure parents when you don't think there are any red flag symptoms?
I think, first of all, point out the positive things. Try to point out what's normal. So, you know, if a baby is maybe pooing lots one day, not so much the next day, but they're growing very well and they seem otherwise settled overall, you know, that's not a concern. Sometimes parents get very micro, and that's completely normal. But if their child, for example, doesn't poo one day, immediately they're thinking, oh my goodness, something is wrong. But like everybody, there are going to be some days when you go and some days when you don't. So it's just trying to reassure them that that's okay. Look at what, or try to point out what would not be normal. So if you're looking at those red flags, you could say, well, look, they're not having any of these symptoms here. So that's really, really positive. And I suppose try to give some written information if you have anything available in your department. But try to confirm the positive things and just reassure them that if things are not okay, we would have picked this up as healthcare professionals. If you are concerned in the future, you can always get back in touch with us and we can review, you know, we can come out and see you again, possibly we could do something over the phone. So it's never that we're never going to see you again, but it's just trying to increase their confidence and reduce their anxiety, really.
Well, we've reached the end of our chat today. I just wanted to say thank you so much for speaking with us. I've certainly learnt a lot. Could you maybe just summarise what we've covered off today?
So we've come to the end of the podcast, but to summarise everything I've discussed, the gut begins development in utero and continues to grow rapidly in early life. The gut microbiome also develops in the early years and is important for overall health. In terms of poo, it's normal for poo to change throughout early life, but frequency, consistency and colour should be monitored as they can be a good indicator of digestive health. And what's important for you is to know when to refer on to other healthcare professionals for further support, find out what guidelines your trust has, and find out the contact details of healthcare professionals and clinics that you might need to refer on to.
To keep up to date with future episodes of the Beat podcast from Nutritia, make sure you subscribe on whichever platform you listen to your podcasts on. For more updates on the show, as well as lots of other educational content from Nutritia, sign up to our newsletter at www.nutritia.co.uk. I'm not going to do that.